It's time for the Talent Talk Radio Show, brought to you by People G2, a nationwide leader in background checks and employment screening solutions. People G2 gives their clients access to the best human capital management and due diligence tools available. They are dedicated to helping their clients with all of their people-related decisions. To learn more, go to www.peopleg2.com. Talent Talk centers on the topics of talent recruitment and management, leadership development, company culture, and employee engagement. These are all timely topics for CEOs, entrepreneurs, HR professionals, and business leaders. We hope that as you tune in to listen each week, whether to the live broadcast or to the podcast on iTunes or iHeartRadio, that you hear something you can take away that will help you grow and impact your career in a positive way. And now, here's the host of the Talent Talk Radio Show, the founder and CEO of People G2, Chris Dyer.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in here to Talent Talk. You know, I've really had this incredible experience of being able to meet so many cool leaders, so many people that are out there thinking about talent and culture, and I've asked them a lot of questions, and I've really, you know, tried to get into their heads and figure out what they're thinking about, and that's where this show really came from. We're trying to, you know, figure out more about what smart people in the business world are thinking about, and hopefully allowing you to listen in on our conversation and get some, you know, words of wisdom and some things that maybe you can take back to your company, back to your life, and make things a little bit easier. You know, I've had a really kind of a fun achievement this year, released my first book, which is a bestseller, The Power of Company Culture. And that really is inspired by so many of the guests I've had on the show over the last 5 years who had such fantastic stories, so many, you know, lessons and things that they're doing as leaders inside of their amazing companies. Love to have you check it out. You can find it on Amazon or wherever you buy books, The Power of Company Culture. All right, Talent Talk is live here every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And you can access it live through the TuneIn app on your phone or wherever. But if you're catching us after the fact, or if you'd like to subscribe and make sure you get that show on your phone or your computer, you can do that on iTunes or iHeartRadio. Love for you to subscribe, rate us, give us a comment, whatever it may be. Over the last several years, we've amassed over 10,000 of you a day who are downloading from one of these different platforms and listening to the show. So a big thank you to everyone who's being a part of it. One of the things that we've been trying to do this year, though, is get more kind of live or interactive conversations going on Twitter, which is sort of our designated place to have a conversation. And if you'd love to give us a comment, send us a question on Twitter right now, or even after the fact, if it's, you're listening to the show on a podcast, at PeopleG2 is where you send it. If you get that hashtag Talent Talk, all one word in there, my producer, Mike, will make sure we can feed those into the live show, or we can comment on them after the fact. Love to keep that conversation going. But so you know who we're talking to today, let's figure that part out. My first guest will be Mike Gelman, the founder and CEO of High Five Career Coaching. And he'll be then followed after the commercial break. John Jackson, the president of William Jessup University, will be in here letting us know what's going on over there. But let's go ahead and get to my first guest, Mike Gelman. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself? You know, what's important for us to know about you as it relates to our conversation today? And, of course, an overview of what you're doing over there at High Five Career Coaching.
Well, up until about 2 years ago, I used to be on the inside of corporate America, and I oversaw the employee engagement and talent management processes for the company, and did a lot around organizational change and development and culture, one of your favorite topics. And almost 2 years ago, I left to focus full-time on building High Five Career Coaching, and we work with individuals and organizations to help them reach their potential.
So how did you get started with this? I mean, you said you started on the inside first. So as it relates to organizational development or culture or talent management, what really kind of got your start to be thinking about that and to actually make your work a part of that?
Mm-hmm. When I was a lot younger, I really had this missive in my mind of to humanize the workplace. So it's just kind of the thing that comes to mind. And while I was an undergraduate at San Diego State, I took this class, industrial and organizational psychology, and it was kind of an epiphany because I always loved business and I always loved psychology, and this combined both. And so ever since that point in time, I went on that path of pursuing that route. And so that's kind of where it started. And then with going from internal to external, I just knew I wanted to have an even broader impact and be able to reach more people. I had a lot of ideas and wanted to make a lot of what's available in organizations available to even smaller businesses and individuals, tools that they can use to advance their careers and whatnot.
Well, I love that story because it's really kind of, I guess, is one of the ways in which we really suggest that people try to improve their organizations or improve themselves, and that is to get out there and learn something new and be exposed to something. And you may find that, you know, you find this remarkable thing that really ties into your kind of your core beliefs, or your maybe can push you in a new career in a new way. And you know, books and knowledge and you know, getting out there and kind of getting outside of your bubble, outside of your comfort zone, is a way in which people often do that. I know you wrote a book, kind of speaking of books, called Pipe Dreams, The 7 Pipelines of Career Success. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what inspired you to write the book and, you know, maybe some of the things that people might get out of it if they choose to read it.
I mean, because it really started over the years. I had many employees would come up to me and either, you know, ask me and say, "Mike, tell me what I should do, you know, for my career." Or they'd come to me frustrated that their manager wasn't doing enough to pave the way for them or shop them around for other opportunities within the organization. And it occurred to me that they weren't taking ownership of their career. And they were relying on someone else to tell them what to do. And to me, that seemed a little backwards. It was giving away a lot of their own power, their personal power.
Mm-hmm.
And so my motivation for writing the book was to, you know, write something to give them the tools and the mindset to take ownership and to let them know more about behind the scenes, what their leaders are talking about, what their leaders consider potential, and what are the successful people in organizations, what are they doing that's different than the rest of us? You know, there's things that they're doing that might not always be obvious to most employees. And so I wanted to kind of peel the curtains back a little bit and share that with the readers so that they can feel more empowered and have the right mindset to actively manage their career versus just be more passive, as if they're watching a play and they're in the audience watching this play going on without realizing that they're the main actor in right. the play and they should be up on stage.
Right, right. Well, I think it was in some movie it was like, you know, you should be the lead in your own life, right? You should be the leading actor. Not playing the secondary role or even just working back behind the scenes. You should be the lead in your own life. So that makes a lot of sense. So you talked about some of these things that people can do, and maybe if we kind of focus in on managers, what can managers do that you've seen to be better and to really engage their employees at a different level?
Yeah, I think today's managers really struggle a lot, and you've probably seen this too, is they're spread pretty thin. And so the challenge that many have, even with the best intentions, is spending the time they need, the face time with their employees, or if it's a virtual organization or, you know, their employees are spread out, you know, whatever, the Skyping or phone time. I think that's a key aspect of it, is being in tune. There's a lot being, you know, there's a lot of discussion around employee engagement these days, and you know, one of the key things employees want is opportunities to grow and develop. And in my history, having worked with engagement, one of the lowest rated items has been my manager cares about my growth and development. And so anything that a manager can do to demonstrate that care and concern, even if they don't have all that time. And so there's different ways to do that. It might be through existing meetings that they have, to build in an element into their regular staff meetings or regular one-on-one meetings to talk about the employee's career. And so it doesn't have to take extra time. It's just maybe reprioritizing some of the existing time and to get a sense of, you know, what it is they want or where they want to go or what resources would be helpful for them. You know, obviously training, sponsoring conferences. That's what I stepped out of today, so I apologize for the background noise at a human resources conference here in Long Beach today. But those are a couple of things.
Yeah. Well, then where do you think, so we kind of talk about what managers can do with current employees, then maybe you could talk a little about where you're seeing organizations getting tripped up as they begin to develop that relationship with high potential employees and those people who they want to come work for them, but maybe haven't quite landed them yet or quite brought them into the fold. You know, where can they be doing a better job?
I think one of the areas is when they're having these discussions, succession planning discussions or discussions about the rising stars in the organization and who might fill what seat. And many times it's almost like chess. They're strategizing and while the leaders are engaged in discussion, when I would ask them, well, do you know what your employee, if they even want to be a director or a VP? And three times out of four, they don't know. And so, you know, that's a big gap.
Right.
That's a big pitfall there, because, you know, sometimes you can nudge an employee, a high potential, in that direction, but many of them feel like it's a punishment, you know, take on more responsibility, you know, and they don't quite see the path of how that's going to work. And so I think it's really important to really have that connection outside of it's built into the process of these high potential discussions. A second area where I see they trip up is sometimes companies will develop a specific program for high potential employees. And the program could be, you know, 3 months, 6 months, a year long. And what happens is they're often expected to still do their day job while tackling, you know, all the obligations under the development program. And I think one of the big challenges is, you know, how can they perhaps free up some of the time or responsibilities for these high potentials while they're engaging in some of these other programs, or what kind of guidance can they provide for them? And it's a double-edged sword, because from the executive suite, you know, their perspective is, well, that's our reality. You know, you're always juggling, you know, a lot of these things, and that's a way for them to figure that out and learn how to delegate and things of that, so, which is a valid point. And on the flip side, though, I have seen some high potentials just burn out or become disenchanted. And so it's knowing the organization and striking that balance around there, and knowing when to push someone and give them a nudge into an area that you're talking about, comfort zones, push them out of their comfort zone. And, you know, what's really not aligned with kind of the direction that they want themselves.
Right. It's almost like we're getting a lot out of them. Let's try to get more out of them. And, you know, instead of being happy that you're getting so much out of them compared to everybody else, I've often sort of suggested to people they need to look at why those top performers are top performers and maybe try to figure that piece out so they can replicate it back for those who they aren't getting as much out of and spend the time there. But you're right, kind of, you know, overwhelming their top performers can put them in a bad position. They can't keep performing at that level. They feel burnt out. They're having to do all that extra stuff and their job. And it's a great point that I'm wondering if, you know, it seems intuitive to us talking about it from the outside looking in, but we see it over and over again on the inside out. You know, they continue to make that mistake with some of their top people.
Yeah. And it's also a big debate, too, whether to tell them that they're high potential or not. And so I've had many conversations with people who have left the company saying, well, if I knew I were high potential, I would have stayed. I didn't know they thought that well of me because it didn't feel that way.
Right.
You know, they're just going on their experience. They didn't know. Nobody, you know, it didn't feel that way, or there wasn't a special program, or they weren't feeling challenged, so they left.
Right.
And so that's the other side of the coin. And my thinking's evolved over the years around that issue, that debate, you know, tell versus don't tell. You know, there's pros and cons of each.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, let's kind of go back in time. You know, we're kind of talking about your current work right now, but maybe you could kind of, I'd be fascinated to know kind of what your first attempt looked like as you were trying to change a culture inside of an organization for the first time.
First time I was working with a department that, you know, maintained the grounds. It was a conservation-related organization, and this group maintained the grounds and, you know, keeping it clean and fixing things around the campus. And they had a lot of infighting going on, a lot of conflict, a lot of hotline complaints, things of that nature. So long story short, I was asked to come in and assist. And so, you know, I interviewed all the employees, the man and the leadership, you know, kind of got a sense of what the key issues were, and then, you know, put together a plan to help them kind of reshape the department. And it was really, it needed a pretty big culture change. It was definitely one. It was had represented employees as well, which added some wrinkles to our approach. But we worked on the, you know, how do they recognize and reward employees, you know, how have those conversations. I think you talk about it in your book that you just published around those types of conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, so we focused around some of that. We focused around how to deal with conflict. We did some conflict coaching skills for the leaders, and we did some mediations as well. We did a lot of team development, so help them understand their work styles and how to leverage their strengths. So we did a whole host of things. I worked with them for a good year and a half, almost 2 years. And I went from a department where people were just leaving and couldn't wait to get out, to one where people were asking how to get into the department.
Mm.
It really was wildly successful, and it was my first one. And I had a mentor at the time who was kind of in the background that was really helpful for me. He was outside the organization. And I was pretty proud. And to be honest, though, that high went to a low about a year later, when things seemed to just slip right back.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was a big lesson in terms of how do you get a culture to stick once it's changed. Mm-hmm. And so that, I've since then learned, you know, ways in which to do that. But that was my first culture change.
Right. Yeah, and it's, you know, you want them to do well, and it's, you know, if you don't have the right mechanisms in there and those champions, those people to keep it going, that can be tough.
Yeah,
it's tough to see it kind of go to slip back. But, you know, there are some things that kind of, I think, are human nature, or at least are very common to happen if we're not intentional. And if they're not continuing to be intentional, then, yeah, they can kind of easily go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of thinking about being intentional, are there certain types of clients that you enjoy working with the most?
Yeah, I work with a wide variety, but I have to say that I really enjoy working with technical professionals and kind of the high achievers. And I love working with individuals with that type of that mindset. And it's interesting because I'm wired like an engineer. I'm wired like an IT, you know, if you have me take an assessment or whatnot. But my whole life has been spent on the people and relationships part mm-hmm. of business. And that's where my passion is. And so I find I'm able to help bridge that gap, whether it's working with an executive or a high potential or employee or, you know, individual contributor.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense, kind of given, like you said, your approach and the things that you find are interesting. You know, it's interesting, certainly the idea and the concept of an executive coach or the kind of coaching that you're offering has certainly become more popular over time. There's a lot of really great ones out there now. Maybe you could kind of speculate why you think it's become so popular. Is it the results that people get? Is it the, you know, ability to have somebody else that they can rely on that has the expertise to help them? I mean, why do you think maybe it's been so popular over the last decade?
Yeah, that's a good question. Coaching used to really have a negative stigma. Like, if you were getting a coach, there's something you were doing wrong, right? Mm-hmm. It was usually...
Yeah, you were one step out from the door, right?
Someone was brought in. Yeah, you're one step away from the door. And I think the corner's been turned on that over the last 10 years. And as the organization has professionalized as well, you have the International Coach Federation, that has the accrediting body for the largest one anyway, for coaches, has been able to help. And so now people are looking more for the accredited coaches and, you know, the principles that go behind it, you know, where coaching is voluntary and it should be for development. And so I think that the tide has shifted to coaching for development. And just as athletes have coaches, that why shouldn't employees or executives have coaches? And, you know, with the executives, they tend to become isolated at the top. And I think one of the reasons why executive coaching has been flourishing is they can get the uncensored, you know, unfiltered support and feedback from a coach. And it's viewed as a benefit now, more so now, as a developmental and not a punitive.
Right, right. Well, one of our kind of new favorite questions to ask our guest on the show this year is there an app or a gadget or something you've added to your life or work that you suggest we check out?
The app or a gadget? That's a good question. Well, one of my favorite things, I used to do a lot of driving, a little bit less now, and so one of my favorite apps is Audible. .com, and so I actually listen to most of my books now, and I absolutely love it, and it's really inexpensive. It's like $15 a month.
Yeah.
And so I consume a lot of books that way, and it helps keep me on top of things and trends and issues and whatnot. So,
and
my favorite.
I couldn't agree more. That's a great one to have. And, you know, people who say they don't have time to read, I say if you're in the car, you have time because you can listen. It's a good one. And so, speaking of books, is there a great book that you've read recently you might suggest we check out?
Currently I'm reading Tony Robbins' book called Master the Money Game. It's really interesting. He interviewed about 50 of the world's top, you know, money managers and people that are really successful in that regard, and kind of gleaned their advice and put it into this book along with his own experience. And, you know, I'm really enjoying that. And he speaks a lot about our relationship with money and dreaming big. And I find that with many of my clients, you know, that holds many of them back in terms of their careers and the mindset around money and building wealth and what's their value. And so I'm enjoying it.
Well, sounds like a great one to check out. You know, speaking of checking something out, how can people find out more about you and your work that you do if they're interested in learning more or possibly engaging with you?
They can go to my website, MikeGelman.com, and they can also connect with me on LinkedIn. So you'll invite them to connect with me on LinkedIn. And so those are probably the two best ways to connect with me.
Well, fantastic. Mike, thanks so much for being a part of the show and all of your great insights today. Hopefully we can have you come back, give us an update on all the cool stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with my second guest, John Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Imagine buying a newspaper and discovering that the news you're reading is 6 months old. There isn't much that stays the same for 6 months. And the same thing goes for background checks. In a time when so much outdated information is being passed around, it's good to know that People G2 offers something different. At People G2, we provide today's intelligence, not yesterday's news. Our value-added approach offers you a fully FCRA-compliant solution that includes up-to-the-minute information. By combining industry-leading technology with old-school human investigation, People G2 is able to give you information that is accurate right now, delivered quickly to our online system or integrated with your HR system. So ask yourself, are you comfortable working with old news, or are you ready for a different kind of background check company? Visit PeopleG2.com or call 800-630-2880. That's 800-630-2880 or PeopleG2.com.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
I'm on the observation deck of the Empire State Building to demonstrate how much material Waste Management recycles. As North America's largest residential recycler, last year alone, Waste Management recycled 12.9 million tons. How much is that? Let's do the math. Carry the six. It's enough to fill this building more than 27 times. With experience like that, we're bound to have a program that can help your business recycle. Talk to Waste Management or visit thinkgreen.com.
Welcome back to the Talent Talk Radio Show. If you happen to miss our last guest, we had a really good one in here. Mike Gelman kind of gave us his thoughts on kind of the work that he's doing. You can always check that out probably next week or so when we release this live show as a podcast on iTunes. You can also listen to us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, everywhere. If you type in Talent Talk, you can probably find us. You can even go to talenttalkradio.com, and we've got all our shows there, and it's easy to search for past guests. So my next guest is John Jackson, president of William Jessup University. As a reminder, don't forget to tweet your questions live right now at PeopleG2. Include that hashtag, Talent Talk, all one word. We'd love to keep the conversation going, whether it's live right now or even after the fact. Maybe whenever it is you hear the show, love to have you give us your thoughts and questions. So, all right, so let's bring in John. John, welcome to the Talent Talk Radio Show.
Thanks, Chris. Great to be with you and great to be with your audience.
Yeah, so why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself, what's important for us to know for our conversation today, and, of course, you know, give us a rundown on your role and what you're doing over there at William Jessup University.
I would love to do that. I'm a native Californian, kind of a rare breed. I live in the Sacramento area. William Jessup University is a faith-based private liberal arts college, started in 1939 in the Bay Area, moved here to the Sacramento area about 2004. We've had really tremendous growth the last several years, about 1,650 students right now. Started off with about 400 students back in 2004. And I've been the president, Chris, since 2011. We've been really fortunate to be adding a lot of degrees and a lot of graduate programs and now also a number of online programs. And so pretty excited about that. And I have a long background in local church, pastoral ministry, other nonprofit organizations, and then have been privileged to serve on the board of some for-profit organizations as well. Kind of consider myself a leadership expert, but what that means is that I've failed a lot of times, and I've tried to learn from those failures.
I love that. So you've mentioned that you've been on with many different organizations, both for-profit and nonprofit. Maybe when you look at organizations across the board to consider the importance of things like strategic leadership, you know, especially the executive level, since you kind of brought up that leadership component, what is it that makes, you know, a great leader? And maybe what, you know, where do they falter? Can you kind of give us the high and the low of what you've seen?
Sure. Well, one of the things I've been studying and trying to practice leadership for the past 35 years or so, I always tell people, Chris, that I'm an imperfect practitioner of everything I teach, but four things that I think all great leaders do. First thing is that they cast vision. They really see the future. They maybe see ahead of other people. They cast vision. I also think that we create environments, and those environments, by the way, have to be healthy environments. I think it's so important that leaders create culture and sustain culture that's healthy. So you cast vision, you create environments, you develop systems. At the end of the day, you've got to be a really strong system developer. And then at the final conclusion would be to equip leaders. And I really think maybe that's a big distinction, Chris, between a very successful leader is somebody who creates other leaders to share the vision, share the passion, and extend it. And I have a personal bias about the discipline of execution. I think a lot of people cast vision and can think about a lot of these things, but they aren't consistent in the discipline of execution and then sharing that vision with others so that others become, as it were, co-owners of the vision. I think that's a real separator between a great leader and just a good or average leader.
So kind of in your experience, you said over 35 years here, you know, when leaders hit some of these pitfalls and they're really maybe unable to evolve, right? I mean, that's one of the things I see is a great leader can continue to evolve and become whatever their organization or their team needs them to be. Do you see that they tend to kind of falter in that area as an organization changes, or is there something else going on here that we should be thinking about?
That's such a great question, Chris, and pretty insightful, because the truth is that I like to say that leaders are learners, and if leaders are not learners, they're not leading for long. I'm thinking about one organization. I led it for 13 years from the day it was a startup and kind of created until the last day there. When you think about it, it was one organization, at least one corporate structure, but in that 13 years, I think I really led four different organizations. So, you know, organizations are like people. They have life cycles, and sometimes you go to an organization and it's just literally in its infancy or maybe adolescence or adult years. And sometimes, by the way, you go to an organization and you say, gosh, this organization's kind of out of gas. It's in its waning years. And if you don't infuse it with some strength, so the leader's got to keep growing. The leader's got to keep evolving and got to be learning. And quite frankly, that's one of the reasons to keep hiring younger, hiring fresh, and then being willing, by the way, to be challenged by people who come from different industries. I think every organization has the potential to struggle with myopia, only hearing and reading from the same voices instead of learning from other folks who come out of other industries and other fertile research and background that can help you with a different perspective.
Yeah, and that's one of the biases we've talked about on this show before. You know, you're kind of only reading the stuff that from the people who you agree with, right? Or reading the right things that reinforce your opinions instead of looking at, well, what if I was wrong? Or what if there isn't? Yeah. What if something else is going on here, right? Or what else can I learn from somebody else? And there's so many.
And you know, Chris, kind of a crazy thing that happens today because of social media, we can actually choose to, quote, unfriend or block out people whose opinion we don't agree with. And one of the dangers of that is we kind of develop these selected filters that gets us avoiding hearing from anybody we don't agree with. And, you know, I think our society is very polarized, but on the other hand, it's really challenging if you are only hearing from people you agree with.
Yeah, and this is confirmation bias we're talking about, and
right,
it's really, really dangerous. And I think people should to take a look at that. I mean, it's we all know your opinion is the right one, but you might want to just think about how your opinion might get better, right? And that's the way I try to frame for people. Maybe what you know could be improved and could get better. And then instead of being changed or maybe that you're wrong, which we know is probably the reality, I try to get sometimes people to think about could they expand it or get it better.
That's so good. So good. Really good, Chris.
Well, you know, how difficult is it? You talked about a culture that might be kind of, you know, running out of gas. And, you know, really we want a quality culture inside an organization, regardless of if this is day one or, you know, day 100,000. You know, how do they do that through the lens of leadership? And is that the only way they can do it? Are they reliant on leaders being effective, or are there other components to that?
Yeah, that's a great thought as well. You know, John Maxwell is the guy who's written a lot on leadership, and he really affected my early journey in particular in leadership maybe 30 years ago plus. And one of the things that John Maxwell writes about in 21 Laws of Leadership is the law of the lid, and that is when leaders tend to reach a level of effectiveness and then they hire beneath themselves, They're not secure. They won't hire somebody who brings great strength, and that becomes actually a lid in the organization. And then Stephen Covey later talked about the speed of trust, and we all know the phrase "speed of the leader, speed of the team." I really think, Chris, it's very hard if leaders have reached the maximum point of their effectiveness and they're kind of waning. It's hard to birth new culture. It's hard to birth new life and vitality if the leader's really waning. So that speed of the leader, speed of the team, it's kind of a truism. If the leader's not growing and vital and dynamic, it makes it very, very challenging for the organization to be that.
So let's say the leader, to me, that's an approach, right? So they have the right approach. Yeah. What are some of the other direct things that they need to do to really impact a company culture from a strength standpoint?
Yeah, let me just give a couple things. I've read, as I said, maybe as many as 30,000 pages on leadership over the year. And I'll tell you, I've read a number of different studies, Chris. And my sense is this, out of all of them, one of the key characteristics is integrity. And that might seem to be an obvious, but if a leader says one thing and they do another thing, there's dissonance. There's a sort of a disintegrated energy that happens. So integrity is super important. Second thing is passion. If a leader has integrity and then they bring passion, that's super important. So that's kind of a form of energy or excitement about the future. But I'm going to give you a third one. Integrity, passion. A third one is maybe surprising, clarity. You know the old KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, or keep it simple, silly, if you have young children in the room. I just think clarity, Chris, is so important that a lot of leaders don't practice their messaging. They don't practice just being very focused, very clear. Sometimes people call it the elevator test. Can you, in 60 seconds, tell somebody the vision, the purpose, the mission, the why? As Simon Sinek talks about, the why of your organization. I think integrity, passion, and clarity, those are three things that are great contributors to corporate culture.
So let's assume that they have done these things. They've been successful. So the leader has brought about this culture change in a company and really, you know, reinforced the right things. And the employees have also embraced it. So that part's going good. How then do the employees, the talented individuals that make up a company, go in, you know, day in and day out and make the culture and the company continue to function at a high level? What part do they play in there?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, I just think about consistency. If we are consistently delivering grade A service, if we're consistently embodying the values of the organization, there's nothing like what Jim Collins calls the flywheel effect, where we just keep doing the right thing over and over again. There's an energy that builds up. So if employees in a culture will be consistent, that's super important. Second thing that I think of a lot is the whole idea of who do you make heroes of? What stories do you tell? Part of what employees can do is catch each other doing something right, honor the people in your culture, on your team, or in your organization who are doing great things. And I think that's a really helpful thing. Who do you make a hero of? Who do you honor? Maybe one more thing, Chris, I might mention. This is an important aspect to leadership that a lot of people miss, and that is reproducing leaders. You know, really secure leaders want to have strong leaders underneath them. And I find that great leaders and great culture are reproducing cultures. They'll try to train up and develop and equip people so that they're not just leading followers, they're also leading other leaders who then go on to reproduce.
So is that what's really needed then from the ground up to kind of keep things moving forward? Do we need to have our next set of leaders, our next set of, you know, champions, and those people really driving home what their manager is sort of, you know, valuing and putting forward, to kind of being out there and waving the flag and making that happen at that level? Or is there something else too that they need to bring?
I think that reproductive culture is really important, along with the culture of, you know, telling hero stories. Jessup's a growing organization, but I interview a final interview every single full-time employee here at Jessup. It's only a 30-minute process, but I'm disciplined and committed to doing that. Part of what I'm doing, Chris, is trying to impart into those first-line workers who are just coming into work at Jessup that they have a vision for the future and that they want to grow and cultivate their expectations. I really think that's a huge part of developing an ongoing story, is continually infusing a passion for the future and people reproducing leadership at all levels.
And you mentioned your university is growing and you're adding on lots of different majors and different ways that people can interact. Are most of your students in the Bay Area, or, how has that grown and changed into, with online courses and things like that?
Yeah, that's great. We're relatively new to the online game, but our main campus is in Rockland, California. That's about 18 miles east of Sacramento on the way to Lake Tahoe, beautiful 80-acre campus. We have about probably 1,300 students here, a couple hundred students in the Bay Area itself, and then another 100 or so students online. We've got 7 degrees online, just started out this fall, but we're expecting, Chris, in the next couple of years to have 1,000 students online just in a short period of time because it can scale. You can serve so many students. But the main campus is here in Placer County, or the city of Rockland, about 18 miles east of Sacramento. And believe it or not, we're an old Herman Miller furniture factory. So we took an old Herman Miller furniture factory. It was designed by the great architect Frank Gehry, won an award in 1991, the American Institute of Architecture, right here on this campus. And when the Herman Miller factory closed down post 9/11, Jessup moved in from the Bay Area and took over this campus. It's been an amazing experience. We'd love to have your listeners come visit if they're in the Northern California area.
That sounds like a pretty interesting story there, and certainly, so glad that you guys were able to come in and keep that architectural gem alive. That didn't get lost to waste in time, like so many others have happened throughout our country. So it's good that you've been able to do that. Is there a particular degrees that you guys focus on? I mean, do students tend to come to you for a particular discipline?
Sure. I'll just tell you the top 5 degrees at Jessup. Number 1 degree is business. We have particular strength in finance and entrepreneurship. I'm really committed to helping students launch new enterprises. And so business is our number 1 with finance and entrepreneurship. Number 2 is psychology. A lot of human services. We came out of being a Bible theology school and pastoral training. That's still really strong at Jessup. But psychology would be number 2. Number 3 is education. We have a relationship with about 600 schools in the area. Number 4 is biology, and number 5 is kinesiology. A lot of the sciences, healthcare systems are really big here. And so within our business degree, by the way, we work a lot with tech companies. Computer science program is growing strong at Jessup. And so we've got both, I think we've got about 25 undergraduate degrees, 7 graduate degrees, and 7 online degrees where you can go either undergraduate or graduate fully online.
Oh, great. Well, one of the questions we've been asking our guests this year, and we've been getting some really unusual answers, which we like, and some that make a lot of sense too. So we'll see what you have for us. And that is there an app or a gadget that you've been finding especially useful in your work this year?
It's so funny. I think about that question, and I feel bad. I'm not a Luddite. I'm pretty technically competent, but I'm going to give you kind of a simplistic answer. I actually use the notes function in my phone and on my laptop and they're synced, of course, to just regularly keep track of my plans. I'm a little bit old school, I guess. I think about annual plans, 90-day plans, 6-week plans, just kind of dividing it down. And I use the notes function for a lot. If I'm in a meeting, I'll take notes. They're electronic. I can share them with my assistant. I can share them with other team members. And I use that notes program over and over and over again. I'll be in a grocery store, Chris, and I'll take out my phone, and people probably think I'm texting, but I'm actually writing a note, and I just use that to compile things and keep stuff on the radar screen. So a little bit old school, kind of a simple gadget.
I mean, it's a good one. I know sometimes people will go from that to like an Evernote or those, because they're a little bit easier to search and compile and things like that, but it's great that you have a system and are keeping that in there. I mean, there's just that process, right? Whether it's on your phone or whether it is a actual book. I mean, I still carry around a book and I put my to-do lists and notes in the book because
that's awesome.
I just don't have the same connection to them if I type them into like a note. It's lost. But yet if I have the book, I'll look back in the book and I'll remember stuff and it's easy for me to... Whatever your process is, it's important that you have a process. I think that's the best thing.
And whenever I coach people, Chris, that's exactly what I say. I use Evernote, by the way, and other things. But I say to people, you know what? At the end, I have one son-in-law who's very artistic. And he gets so frustrated with these time management systems because they're so linear and kind of engineered. And so I think I helped him a year ago, and I said, look, why don't you just free yourself from that? What works for you? Well, visual images works for him. If he does a task in a linear way where there's, you know, 17 to-dos, he gets immobilized. Yep. But if you draw him a picture, make some connections, then he gets excited because he can see that picture in his mind. Whatever system works for you, use that system, but be disciplined in execution.
How about books? Is there a book that you are reading now or recently read that you might share with the audience?
Yeah, I am a big reader of biographies. I enjoy, I'm reading a biography right now on Da Vinci, and that's outside my field, but he was certainly a Renaissance man, so I'm enjoying that book. And then I recently finished a book called Most Likely to Succeed. It's been out for a couple years, but it really was a pretty challenging critique of educational and training systems that we have in K-12, college, and even a workforce. Both those books, that biography on Da Vinci and the Most Likely to Succeed books, have been really helpful. So I try not to only read in my field of leadership or organization or education. Try to read history and biography as well as kind of current social trends.
Well, those sound like great books for us to check out. You know, you've mentioned a lot of great things on the show today. If you were to summarize, maybe if someone only remembered one thing from our conversation today, what is it you hope they might take away?
If you're making me boil it down to one thing, Chris.
Down to one thing, yeah.
That's kind of rough. The one takeaway would be this. Leaders, traffic, and hope. I really think that casting vision thing, seeing the future, leaders, traffic, and hope would be my one takeaway. If you're in a leadership role at whatever level, position of influence, you got to be able to see the future and pull people from the present into the possibilities of tomorrow.
So what's the best way for people to find out more? I know they might want to reach out for you as a speaker, consultant. They might want to find out more about the university. Why don't you give us the rundown on all the best places for them to go?
Thanks, Chris. You've been really gracious today, and I hope your audience has enjoyed this. If they want to find out information about William Jessup University, go to Jessup, JESSUP.edu, Jessup.edu. There's certainly a link there for the president. You can find out about me. If you want to go to my personal website, it's Dr. John Jackson, drjohnjackson.com, and you can get all the information, contact information, and that sort of thing there.
Well, John, thanks so much for being on the show today. Hopefully we have you come back at some point and give us an update on all the cool stuff that you're doing. But we really appreciate you being here.
Look forward to it, Chris. Thank you for you and for your audience.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to today's show. Hopefully you've gained something you can use in your own career in a positive way. Don't forget to find us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, subscribe, and let us know how we're doing. Next week, my guests are Francesca Gino, the professor of business administration at Harvard Business School. I'm sure you know you've heard of them maybe once or twice. And Sean Andrews, the founder and CEO of Andrews Research International. Until then, do what you love and show the world how talented you can be today.
You've been listening to Talent Talk Radio, brought to you by People G2.